Hi, I'm Becca Lewis, your host for the Shift the Story podcast, where we share tips and tools for making shifts in our lives from the inside out. Once again, I tell stories in this fourth podcast in the Shift Shuttle series. I also give you some effective tips and tools on how to shift habits and reasons why you will want to. For those of you who notice these things, yes, this is a podcast recorded years ago before podcasts became the fashion they are today. However, the ideas have not changed, although the children mentioned have grown quite a bit, and now there is a special bedroom for me when I visit. Gotta listen to know what I'm talking about, so let's get started as we shift the story together. I love the concept of who, what, when, where, and why. Why is a great question for everything. Just like children who could drive us crazy asking why, we might want to ask why more ourselves. However, a word I really love is the word how. I hear things, I study ideas, and it all makes sense to me. But I ask myself, so what? These are great concepts, but how do I do it? How does that fit into the daily life I lead? How does it change anything at all? As I have been contemplating what the shift is, I realized that it is very much about all five of those questions, but at its core is the question, how? This makes me laugh because we just moved to a road that begins with the word, yep, how. How land. Signs and symbols, don't you love it? So thank you for joining me on this shift ride for the next 50 minutes, give or take a few minutes, while I talk about the question, how many signs does it take? The how of it all. Settle in because, once again, I'm going to tell you stories. As you listen, I know that you will discover for yourself that we are all one, not just one in truth, but one in what we are learning about truth and ourselves as the action and reflection of that truth. I realized recently that I'm a writer. Not that I haven't always been writing, but I have not always answered the question, what do you do as I am a writer. In fact, the first time I clearly did this was just a few months ago when the phone man asked me what I did as we walked back up the rise in our backyard together after he checked our phone connection. It took me a while to figure it out in such a succinct manner. Slowly, I have pieced together this idea, and very slowly, I have realized that everything else that I do stems from the fact that I write. And then I talk about what I write. I share what I write. I give workshops on what I write. And hey, I even try to live what I write. It should have been no surprise to me or even others because I always wanted to be a dancer and then a writer. But are you allowed to make a living, in quotes, at what you see that you are and would do or have to do to not go crazy or find easy to do sometimes? That's another story. Well, are you? I leave silence here because for most of us the answer is, and not to keep you in suspense, I know that for most of us the answer, deep down, is the belief and perception that we are not allowed to. And if for some reason we find ourselves doing it, we often devalue it and all the ways it can be devalued. We don't charge enough, or we talk it down. Or, as in our four questions that we often use in the shift, we run from it, we lie about it, we wait for it, and we hide it. and we worry that someone will find out that we aren't good enough. That's if we actually have somehow managed to be doing it. Of course, there is the other side of it, the ego side, where what we do we think is personal, and that we are the doers, and we revel in the glory and fame of it. Actually, either way, ego, or what appears as no ego, is really small e-ego, because we are making it personal to us. But all that is absolutely a lie, because what appears as us doing something is actually God appearing as us. It wasn't that God spoke through Moses, but spoke as Moses. So don't be afraid of that being who you are will leave you unsupported. What you want to be, what you see yourself as, is what is also the substance of your life, which carries with it all the provisions necessary to support your life, which also means income, easily. Which can fool us all, because when it is easy, we begin to think there is something wrong. Once again, that is a lie about it. I know that means you have to figure out what you want to be and what you see yourself as, but that is also very much what the shift is about. Start with truth, and the rest becomes clear. As for me, I did at one time earn a partial living as a dancer by teaching dance. This is different than being a dancer, by the way. This is a teacher who teaches dance. So no, I never made a living as a dancer. I supported dancing by doing other things. And this was true for me as a writer, too. I did other things to support writing. I remember going to a writer's workshop, and they said, if you want to be a writer, do something else for money. So I did. And sometimes I didn't. And then I didn't pay my rent. Now I write and make a living, but it doesn't look at all like my picture of how that was going to be. I had to allow it to be totally different. And it didn't dawn on me until recently that now I write for a living. I don't speak, teach, guide, or make products for a living and then write about it. I write, and then the rest flows from there. And that is what this shift shuttle is about. Not writing, no. About seeing things that look differently than what we think they do. And geez, oh golly, how long does it take to see that? So I am still and always talking about perception, spiritual perception, what I write about. And yes, I do love talking about it. But see the order? For me, writing first. In any case, I noticed that I seem to be really good at not seeing the obvious. Or perhaps that is true for everyone, and it has become obvious, that the obvious is hidden from view because we are blinded by our current perception to what is right in front of us. The question is, what does it take to see what is obvious and right in front of us? Yes, if I was a singer like John Denver, here is where you, the audience, would chorus in and sing the words perception shift. Because like a John Denver song where the words are known by so many of us, if you have been reading and listening to me at any time at all, you know this is all about perception. It is, too. Perception. All of it. It's all perception. I could try to make it more complicated, but that would be silly. It's complicated enough to stop thinking and perceiving like a human and start perceiving as the spiritual being that you are, that there is no reason to confuse the message. Let's talk about the obvious being invisible because of perceptions and tell more stories. Stories are cool. When I visit my daughter Kristen, I sleep in my granddaughter Cassie's bedroom, which she graciously lends to me while she sleeps in her sister's bedroom. Last time I visited, one night she came in and sat beside me and read me one of her books, upon which I promptly fell asleep. It was a very lovely moment for me. Not sure about her, though. So I hope these stories don't put you to sleep. Here's the first. Good grief, it's all about perception story. It just happened. After doing some errands one day, I realized that it was a good time to stop and get my hair cut. It's not like when I lived in the city and had to schedule it weeks ahead with an expensive hairdresser. Well, actually, mostly I did that because he was and still is my friend, and we shared the experience of being together for an hour or two and loved every minute of it. Nope, here in this maze of small towns, I drive to my local Cut It Quick place. I no longer wear fancy suits and lovely heels and jewelry every day, so my nice quick shortcut looks just fine with jeans. I always use one of two women, Shannon or April. Whoops, see, I said April, and it really is Shannon or Lisa. That's kind of what happened in there, too. I wanted to write in the sign-up sheet that I wanted Lisa to cut my hair, but I could not remember her name. I was thinking on the drive there that it might be April, but I wasn't sure. This is a place where they write their names in glitter on the mirror. So as I'm signing in, I am looking over my shoulder, glancing at the mirror to try and read the name. It was funny because she was standing right beside me, and it was obvious. I tried not to be, but I was doing. I thought if I pretended to not be obvious, I wouldn't be. Isn't that silly? Because in many forms, it's something we do all day. If we pretend to not notice, no one else will either. Anyway, back in the haircut place, I was thinking, oh gosh, I can't remember the name and I can't read the name on the mirror. It seemed like it was all smeared or something, and all I could see was the L when I looked closely. So I thought, oh yeah, with an L, it must be April. I looked more than once, by the way, and with a full-blown judgment thought that it might be nice if April would write her name more clearly on the mirror. So I got my hair cut, had a quick, this is 10 minutes, not 2 hours chat, remembered everything we talked about the last time, and I remembered enough to ask about her son's moving out and her coming vacation, but still thought her name was April. Even though now I was facing the mirror and the name April was so smudged on it that I still wasn't sure because I still couldn't remember. Then I went to pay and glanced at the clipboard with a sign-in sheet where she had crossed out the name April and wrote in her real name, Lisa. She must have had quite a giggle watching me try to hide looking for a name. She told me then that she'd seen me looking. So instead of pretending as I did before, I told her I had no idea why I couldn't remember her name and why I said April, who was April anyway, and turned to look at the mirror. Then, very, very clearly, very sharply, was her name Lisa. Clear as day, not smeared, beautifully written. Why couldn't I see her name as Lisa? Because my mind held the idea that her name was April. So I couldn't really see what was there. I had no clarity. I was trying to fit in what I saw into what I believed. Saying it again, no clarity. It was my preconceived perception blocking my view of what was already present. You can't see what is really going on when you have a point of view, a perception, that it is one way when it is not. And truly, we have no idea what way it is most of the time. We are only seeing what we perceive to be real. And since the entire world that we call real is an illusion that it is material, and as long as we hold a picture of how it is, we will never clearly see what is, come on, say it right with me, right in front of us, and spiritual. This next story is the story that inspired the title of this shift shuttle, How Many Signs Does It Take? It's a me and running story. I don't really run. I just move my feet differently than walking. I don't even think I'm going fast enough to be called jogging. It feels like running to me, which is all that counts. Anyway, I had stopped running for a while for a number of reasons, but finally one day I was ready to go again. Let me pause in the story because I want to make a point here. I usually start running around March and then quit in the late fall, somewhere around the first snowfall. However, this was early July. So I could have said to myself with great judgment, Why start now? You're already halfway into the season. Actually, I did say that, or the lying voice said that, but I said, not listening, go away, to that lie, and off I went. That is a how, by the way. I ran down a beautiful circle drive just a few houses away from our house. It circles around and is full of beautiful homes and landscaping, quiet, no cars, perfect. And yes, no dogs without a leash barking and running after me. This was a new route for me. Dell and I had driven it once as we explored our new neighborhood, but I had never walked or run it before. As I ran, I enjoyed all the new sights. Eventually, I noticed that there was a road to my right. I thought, hey, I didn't know there was another exit out of this circle, and kept running. Then I noticed that the road had the same pillars that the road I took in had. Interesting, I thought. They must put those pillars at every entrance, and kept running. Then I noticed that the sunlight seemed different than I thought it would be on that side of the circle, and I kept running. Then I noticed the house that looked like the one I had seen on my way in and thought, how weird that the back looks like the front, and kept running. Are you laughing yet? Then I noticed that I was taking longer to finish the circle than I thought it would, and kept running. Let me pause here and ask you, have you ever piled stones on a trail for others to follow where you were going? Or any version of scattering breadcrumbs to find your way back? This is the idea of this story. How many signs did it take for me to notice that I was circling the circle again? All of those. It wasn't until I saw the number of a house that I knew I had seen on my way in, then I had realized what happened. How many signs? And why didn't I see them before? Same reason that I saw the name April instead of Lisa on the mirror. I had a preconceived idea of how long it would take me to run the circle and how long the circle was. So when I clearly saw the way out, yes, there is only one way, I was in a point of view of this is how it is. And the fact that I was in an unfocused state of mind surely helped. Now, you might think this is the end of this particular story, but there is a follow-up. A few days later, I did the same run. However, I went the opposite direction for variety, and I almost missed the exit again. I almost started running the circle twice, even though I had said to myself, "Watch for the road. That is the road." Why did I almost miss it again? My state of mind perception was different. I was less tense. I knew there were no dogs or cars on that route. The run felt easier because I had run a few days before. My point of view was different. I was going in a different direction. I was seeing everything from a different angle or perception. We always need to be watching our point of view and state of mind. Is it in line with what we want the outcome of our inside perception to be? Of course, we all are wanting to start with the point of view that there is only one mind, one infinite intelligence called love. That's the one we want, that point of view. But, big, real big but here, that is not the perception we have most of the time. Why? Because there are so many material perceptions that we have that we are not aware of. And if we don't uncover them, notice them, and let them go, we often miss the signs and symbol of what has already been provided for us. The exit was already there. It just didn't look like how I thought it would look. Provisions for you to be who you are and live well in that purpose is already present. But I know for sure that it doesn't look like your preconceived perceptions because they are hidden perceptions. We have to uncover those perceptions and let them go, replacing them with a one mind point of view until that is all that is left. Here's some more stories. On the same day I got my hair cut, I was reading one of those magazines that are lying around in every hair salon. Gotta admit, love those little stolen pleasures. When I was a kid, we weren't allowed to drink soft drinks or read comics, but my cousins were. So every time we visited them, my parents relaxed both of those don'ts, and we enjoyed those small pleasures. Kind of the same thing. Anyway, one of those magazines was a story about Elizabeth Smart. Remember, she was the girl who was kidnapped and then found? There is much about her story to learn from, but one thing stands out, and it was what she said afterward. It went something like this. He could change my name and change my life, but no one could take away the fact that I was the daughter of Ed and Lois Smart. And recently she said, and I love being alive. I love being here. I'm excited for my life ahead of me. I am just so thankful for every blessing that I have. Perception. She held a point of view that could not be stolen from her. She could not be swayed from a truth that was evident, whose daughter she is and what they taught her. This is a how. Her second statement is a how. Again, it is a point of view. It is also a state of mind. The outcome? Well, we all know the outcome. Back to the idea of secret pleasures. I often hear others speak of the concept that because we are all studying spiritual concepts and attempting to live spiritually driven lives, we should not be doing, in quotes, other things. We shouldn't be watching TV, going to the movies, hanging out with our friends, or whatever we have personally been trained in one way or another not to do if we were spiritual. Wait. Isn't there something wrong with this picture? If we are coming from the point of view that everything is present is God only, then it is not possible to have anything unless it is God. Then what appears as, yes, TV, comics, food, movies, friends, cars, is always, always, always a sign or symbol, or actually the not clearly perceived representation of what is actually the presence of God, even if sometimes we see the inverted version of it. But like my running past the exit, we hold a perception that it has to look a certain way, which means that we want to practice looking through what appears as a material person, place, or thing to see the spiritual idea of it, which is this time is easiest done by translating the person, place, or thing back to its substance that we know as its qualities. If any of those signs and symbols are pointing to disharmony, bad, evil, whatever you want to call it, then it is not pointing to God, but it is an illusion distracting us from the truth, a missed perception. Missed perception, like Lisa, not April. Notice in my name in the mirror story, nothing changed except my perception. It was missed or missed. So once we are clear about the qualities of God, then what appears as bad, quotes, dissolves, revealing the truth of it. You can find the how of doing these quality shifting ideas in my book, Living in Grace, which you can find at www.perceptionpublishing.com. And there's lots of other great tools for howing there too. But back to that not allowed idea. Often those things we think we shouldn't do, like reading or going to the movies, leads us to an idea that shifts everything. They are like a vehicle for truth. I have a story or two about this. My first published book was the book The ABCs of Life from Women Who Learn the Hard Way. If you haven't seen it, it's divided up into chapters about work, career, being a stepmom, going to school, lots of advice, all using the context of ABC for each piece of advice. This meant that everything I wanted to say, I had to say, beginning with the next letter in the alphabet, and it covered a wide range of topics. I had 6 weeks to write it. It was easy at first. I was full, and still am, of advice. And then I got stuck. So here's what I did. I walked out of my office into the living room and turned on soap operas and watched them with a notebook and pencil at hand. I watched the ridiculous things the characters did, and that triggered lots of advice for me to them. That's how I wrote the last 2 weeks of the book, Soap Opera Watching. By the way, I stopped watching soap operas after I finished writing the book. I no longer needed that symbol. We recently saw the play Jersey Boys, and it was wonderful. You haven't seen it. There's a similar story told by Bob Giotto, who wrote many of those incredible songs sung by the Four Seasons and Frankie Valli. He tells about not being able to come up with an idea about a new song until one night he was watching a movie where the woman got slapped across the face by a man. The man said to her, "What do you think of that?" And she answered, "Big girls don't cry." Of course, that became the huge mega hit, "Big Girls Don't Cry." The idea behind all of this is that what you need is right in front of you, and the signs to it are provided to all of us in multiple ways until you finally see what has already been there. This is what the shift shuttle is about, the awareness that there are signs leading us to truth consistently throughout our daily life. It's learning to look for them and then interpreting them correctly, leaving the trance state of looking with tunnel vision and using wide-angle vision and listening to become aware of them. All of this begins to open our attention to the within that is constantly giving us direction and encouragement. This is one of the hows. How do you know what voice is speaking to you? Is it berating or encouraging? It's obvious which one is truth, isn't it? We all want to live out of our unique gift and feel safe and secure, knowing that our uniqueness is our provision. Discovering what we do or what we can't stop ourselves from doing is one of those tasks that we have set within the shift. We want each of you to bloom in your life as life, big L, intends, or actually is already living. Staying with the truth of being, continuing to begin our premises with I am, big letters, not I'm, small letters. What was previously hidden becomes present. We continue to uncover clues and signs that have been there all along. I had a little giggle about myself a few weeks ago. I realized that when I learn something, the very first thing I want to do is reframe it or repackage it to make it clearer and teach someone what I learned or discovered or uncovered. The giggle was because I remembered one of those times. I was about 11. My very best friend was also 11. It was backyard neighbor Kenny. We had big crushes on each other in 6th and 7th grade, and even after that was all over, we remained, and still remain, very good friends. Anyway, I had gone to a Girl Scout meeting, and in that meeting, they told us about sex. It was the real story about pregnancy and birth. They had got permission from all our parents beforehand, all of whom must have breathed a huge sigh of relief. I clearly remember my walk home after that explanation. The forsythia bushes were blooming through the chain-link fence along the football field. As I walked, I ran my hand along the fence in deep thought. This is what I was thinking. Yuck! That is so disgusting! If that is what you have to do, I am never, ever getting married. When I got home, Kenny was in the backyard waiting for me. I said, "I have something to tell you." He sat on the picnic table. Now he laid down on it and listened. I told him. He said, "Wow." Then, because we were 11, I drew a little doodle on his forehead with my pen, and we never spoke of it again. I had to share. I had to explain. I had to tell what I knew to someone who I knew needed to know. This is the part of who I am that is always present as me. It's what I do today. No, not explain sex, but talk and share big R reality in the variety of ways I am learning to see it. And to me, the ultimate need to know. Each one of you have clues and signs just like that, which lead you back to what is already true about you, your unique spiritual blessing, the one you bring to others. You can't help yourself because it is who you are. It is deeper than the pores of your skin. You can never escape it, but you can pretend to hide, run, wait, and lie about it. And it is never, ever negative, although that may be the way you become aware of it at first. Why do we run, hide, lie, and wait for the gift of ourselves when it is already present? Because the game, the worldview, thinks that it's cool that we're playing it. Just like the virtual reality games on the market now, or all those games from the ones played on phones to computers, it never ends. Fix one thing, fix another. Find a clue, find the treasure. It's never enough, find another. Continuing to try to win in the game is a no-win solution. There is no permanent win. But even within the game are those signs that say, exit. Don't want to play? Here's the way out. I think of it as God leaking through. And the more we choose God, our qualities of the infinite, as substance, and get into that habit, the more leaks or signs or exits we get. Here's another personal story that may help you see those signs for yourself. When I was 8 or 9, I began the process of realizing that I was on my own. By 10, I was aware that if I wanted to be okay, it was up to me. Recently, I read an article where the author said he wasn't really for either presidential nominee because neither one of them really had all our best interests at heart. He closed with a question, why not be your own president of your life? Because, haven't you noticed, we are alone out here. That is exactly what my decision was at 10. I had noticed everyone else was too busy taking care of their needs to really notice mine. It didn't make me angry or bitter. It was just a simple awareness and decision. The article was the second reminder of this awareness. The first was my granddaughter who was visiting. I have noticed the last few years a big change in her. Now, she not only desires to be with us, she begs to visit each year. She bugs her papa and me all day to show her things, and then she does her best to accomplish it. She remembers everything we say and brings it back to us in a variety of interesting twists and turns. After listening to her describe her everyday life, I realized that she, too, had come to the decision that she was on her own because she was alone out here. Yes, we are all on our own out here when we are in the worldview of duality. The worldview has no desire to be a helpmate to us in escaping its perception of lack, which breeds fear, distress, distraction, and greed. The exit signs are not provided by the worldview. They are there because truth is present. Which is the big difference. We know that in truth, we are never alone because there is no out there here. But in order to understand and live that, we have to step into it. We have to know it exists. We have to stand in it for ourselves and let others see we don't live in the game, while shining the light on the path to truth for them to see their own way out. We do need to be the president of our own lives. We do need to form our own cabinet filled with the qualities of truth. We do need to take action, not the action of war, but the action of declaring that we will not stand for what is not right any longer. We will not be part of the lie or promote and encourage it within ourselves. Let me go back to the idea that you have been doing who you are all along. Sometimes it doesn't appear as if what you are doing at the time has any meaning, but sooner or later, you will make the connection. Remember the story of how I wrote the ABC book? I was so excited the first time the books arrived, and I held a solid book in my hand. I just knew I was on my way. However, this was also about the time that I also realized I needed a real job in order to pay bills and eat, and I went back to financial planning. I have told the story of this from many angles and other shift shuttles, but here is an extra piece. At one time, I had loved Arsenio Hall's moments on his TV show where he asked a question that made you think, And that was on my mind as lots of those thoughts popped into my head. I wrote them down every chance I got. In the end, I wrote 401. I finished writing them in New York in my month-long financial training class as I sat in the front row. I think they thought I was taking notes. My roommate, who sat right beside me the entire time, giggled as she saw me write what I hoped was my next book right in front of everyone. That was 1994. I finished it and sent it to my publisher in 1995. He said, "This isn't a book." But I loved those statements and kept them all those years, looking at them once in a while and still loved them, but I didn't know what to do with them. They were called, "So when did you first notice?" Then, just a few months ago, when I was thinking of what I could offer as more to the people in the Women's Council and the reality shift, the idea popped up again with an added twist that I never would have thought of 14 years ago. Now, you all know them as the Daily Nudge, not a book, an email series. I didn't discount the idea. I simply paused and waited for the idea to show itself. A long pause. The point I'm trying to make is that back then, I was the person or idea that I am today, just more aware of truth, which makes me more aware of my USB, unique spiritual blessing, which in turn feeds awareness. Just as when you look within yourself, you will find the essence of who you are is who you have always been and always will be. But you won't discover this by being content with a worldview and letting things distract you. Most of us are so caught up in the day-to-day requirements of the game that we have no energy or time left over to do anything other than to survive. Barely. Our new house reminds us of this daily. We call it the Nothing is Finished house. When we were buying it, we didn't know that it had this quality. We knew there were some details not completed in a new room they had added, but that appeared to be the only place. As we have lived here, we have discovered that nothing was ever completed. Even hanging a door meant leaving a screw or two out of the hinge. A window covered by a curtain has no molding around it. The deck is missing flashing. Nothing was finished. They started project after project and left them all without completing them. Doesn't this sound familiar in our multitasking world? How can we reveal the essence of who we are, live from the one mind, when the noise of uncompleted tasks drowns out the silence of the infinite? So this is a how. Finish something every day, no matter how small. Finish it. Finish something you don't want to finish. Again, no matter how small. Here's another how. Do something you don't want to do. Been putting off. Seems too hard. Seems too easy. Seems too small. Seems too big, scary, or boring. Just do it. In this doing, you are expressing the natural order of divine mind. Each completion allows the next unfolding into your view. When our granddaughter was here, Dal gave her an exercise that would demand her entire attention for an hour. She wanted to do it. She said it would be easy. I laughed a bit, but said, "Sounds good, show me." She asked me to time her. I could see her from my office window as I timed her, even though she couldn't see me. She lasted about 3 minutes in the actual task, and another 16 before she got up and came in, hoping it was an hour and I had forgotten to tell her. She didn't say so, but I knew she was disappointed in herself, so I broke the task down. "How about 5 minutes? You can complete that." She did. Easy. After that, she had a sense of ability about herself that wasn't there before. And I know that this will mean it will be 10 minutes next time, perhaps 12 the next, and one day, the hour. I was watching an old Twilight Zone. It was about a man who had done something wrong and was getting ready to make it worse by doing something else, even more wrong, to make it right. Sounds convoluted, but that's how we often work those things out. Anyway, it was the Twilight Zone. So suddenly he saw himself in the mirror, and himself in the mirror, or the man in the mirror, was talking back to him. Watching this Twilight Zone, I discovered where that famous line, "You talking to me?" originally came from, as he asked the man in the mirror many times, "You talking to me?" The man in the mirror was not afraid. He was sure of himself. The man in the mirror told the man in the room that it was time for him to let him out. He told him that he had always been there, but that he had been ignored, and now they were heading to disaster. In the end, the man in the room let the man in the mirror out, and they walked out together as one whole and completely free being. They stood up to what was wrong and said no together. Isn't this symbolic of the part of you that is hidden? It speaks to you every day. Let it out to be whole and free. Here are two more howls. I've been sprinkling howls all along in this shuttle, but here's a few very specific ones so you won't miss them buried in the stories. Set deadlines. Some of us meet deadlines by staying up late the night before to finish them. Some of us back time it. Since this is something I do because I don't like the feeling of being late for anything, let me explain what I call back timing to you. I figure out when something is due. By the way, when something is due is because I set a deadline for it, but under the terms of the next how, which I will get to in a minute. Then I figure out how long it will take me to finish it. I plan that it will take longer because something will change my timing, including my I don't want to do it phase that might pop in. Then I divide it by how many days or hours, finishing at least a day or, if hours, at least a few hours earlier than the deadline. As I said, I don't like the feeling of being late, either the rush or the drama of it. I remember that I don't like it. It keeps me from doing things that give me that feeling again. That's a how. The second how figures into the first. For anyone that is stuck that doesn't seem to be going anywhere, these two hows fit right into the two hows I spoke of before. One is doing something you don't want to do every day, and two, finish something every day. Here it is. Make a commitment to someone other than yourself. Then make that commitment to someone other than yourself be a conscious choice for yourself. Let me give you some examples. In order to move my writing ahead, I write something that has to be done. I make a deadline while thinking of the difference it might make to someone else. I make a commitment to another person, actually a lot of other persons, as everyone will notice when they are expecting a 7-day shift or 7-week shift or a daily nudge or for me to be on a women's council call or a reality shift call or even the shift shuttle call, all commitments to someone else in order for me to get something done. Another factor in this kind of commitment is that it is bigger than my everyday life and it keeps me thinking years out, but that is another how that just snuck in there. Back to the two I'm talking about. The next step is to add the personal choice that I want to do it for myself, not for someone else. It sounds if that is contradictory, but it's not. How about this as an example? I commit to making dinner for Dell when he is out working in the woods. I do it for him, but I really choose to do it for myself because I like the feeling I get when I get it done more than I like the feeling of not doing it and knowing he has to find food when he gets home tired and hungry. I stopped in the middle of writing this because I have a commitment to myself to run before 7:30, and it was 7. Who is the commitment to? Believe it or not, it is to you. I say to myself, if I can't keep a commitment, how can I ask others to? I didn't want to run, but I did want to be true to you, and I really don't like the feeling of not being in integrity, which is back again to me. Once again, I remind myself that I don't like the feeling, so in this way, I make a conscious commitment to others for myself. The point of making the choice for yourself is a huge one, because if you do not, sooner or later, you will feel frustration and resentment because it will feel as if you are doing everything for other people and nothing for yourself. When you make the conscious choice to do something because you want to do it for yourself, then the whole action, same action, switches to the spiritual point of view. Love your neighbor as yourself starts with loving yourself. Gosh, if we don't learn to do that right, then loving our neighbors the way we love ourselves would not look very good. We would be rude, angry, upset, distant. Well, it's all obvious, isn't it, why there are so many wars and strifes. When we choose to love ourselves first, we are claiming that we are love, loving itself. Capital letters all around here. We can see, can't we, that although doing those four hows may seem as if they have nothing to do with spiritual perception, they absolutely do. Remember those hidden points of views and states of mind that we talked about? Acting from the qualities of God. Yes, that is what those hows are based on. Like order, commitment, perfect place, love, caring, action. Living from these uncovers those hidden states of mind and points of view that keep us stuck in the material way of being. The next step is letting them go and not attaching them to ourselves while saying, "This is how I am." I hear that a lot, all the time, in all its forms. This is how I am. Recently, I asked a relative how she was doing with her breathing exercises. Dell had given them to her because she had been given an oxygen tank to drag around and called to ask him for help. He dropped everything, went over and taught her the exercises again, and she noticed an immediate improvement. Her doctor told her to keep them up. But when I asked her if she was doing them, she said no, because, she said, nothing will help. I have a friend who has this, and she told me nothing will help. It's true. In that perception, nothing will help. Or back to our granddaughter, who, when visiting, said she was afraid of spiders and acted that way. Why? I asked her. I don't know. That's just the way I am, she said. Who told you to be afraid of spiders? I asked. I don't know. That's just the way I am. Do you know anything about spiders? No. But that's the way I am. I have always been afraid of spiders. Okay. Do you want to live the rest of your life this way? No, she said, and started the process of undoing a fear that wasn't her. I told her, here's another how, that being startled by a spider didn't have to lead to fear of it. And although she still jumped when she saw one, she actually picked one up and took it outside before she left. But really, the biggest outcome was she told me she is no longer a person who is afraid of spiders, even though sometimes they still scared her. Wow, what a big difference. How do we identify ourselves? I have another relative who asked for a series of assignments from me that would help with a condition. It looks like a physical condition that she has been carrying around with her for many years. I gave her the assignments, and then I checked on her a week later. Did you do them? These were simple, by the way. Things like walk around the block once in the morning, do one set of stretching exercises a day, and pick an I am statement for each day. Simple. By the way, I gave her the assignments not to cure her, because I know she is already the perfect expression of divine love. I gave her the assignments to shift her perception about herself so that it would reveal to her the perfection of who she is, and to uncover perhaps the original point of view that was appearing as the physical condition to her. Not to heal, but didn't need to be healed, but to live from truth. She said she did them one day, and it made her so upset she quit. I asked her why she quit, because she said, "It gives me hope, and I know that nothing will make it better, so I didn't want to be disappointed again." Think about this. Isn't this what that completely erroneous point of view about the duality of good and bad and lack game says all the time to each of us? This is why the hows, they break the spell. But we have to be willing. In both those relative cases, I drop the subject. Neither are willing to let the issue go right now because they think they are the issue for now. I continue to see them as they really are, and who knows when they will choose to be free. I can't make them willing, but I can choose to commit to see them as whole reflections of love. In this, I am not mentally speaking to them or anyone. That would be trying to heal a material condition and an invasion of privacy. I am seeing them perfectly for myself, since what I see as them is my subjective state and my missed perception of God. Remember, there isn't a problem appearing as either you or someone else. We are all the perfect reflection of the one infinite, intelligent, divine love. It's common to feel afraid when we uncover what isn't true. It helps to know the world views tools, and one of the biggest is the tool of fear. Here's a wonderful quote about fear from Shoyam Trungpa Rinpoche, and I'm sure this is not how you pronounce his name, so forgive me for the butchering of it. Fear is one of those weapons of our ego. It protects the ego. If one reaches the stage where one begins to see the folly of ego, then there is a fear of losing the ego, and fear is one of its last weapons. Beyond that point, fear no longer exists, because the object of fear is to frighten somebody, and when that somebody is not there, then fear loses its function. You see, fear is continually given life by your response, and when there is no one to respond to fear, which is ego loss, then fear ceases to exist. In Buddhism, we find much wisdom in the awareness of signs and symbols that lead to the exit sign from the illusion and into truth. Many religions, spirituality teachings, philosophies teach us that the external world, what we call our reality, or as the shift calls small our reality, is an illusion, a projection of our minds. The universe is subjective. It is either our small human mind subjective or the divine mind subjective state. Which would you prefer? Another small our reality state that we all accept is the state of mind of dreaming. What is more of an illusion, the night dream or the daydream? The Iroquois believe that dreams are ways to access the departed and other dimensions, space and time, outside of our common experience. They know how to, and expect to, obtain information from the nighttime dream world, and often visit their dead, quotes again, in that state of mind. In the nighttime dream state, many of the subjective states, like family and friends, are more easily addressed than in the daytime point of view. Many issues can be resolved either in a meditative state or the dream state. We have less of a belief in the hard, fast rules of materiality in both mindsets. Isn't this a sign that big R reality is more than what meets any of the senses? How many signs does it take until we take the exit out? Like my running exit, we see it all the time, but keep making that circle, signs in front of us all the way. But staying in the belief of an illusionary world, either in a night dream, daydream, trance, or meditation, is still not stepping completely out of the game into reality. They are sometimes useful tools to be put down once they are no longer needed, like turning off the soap operas after I wrote my book. There is a belief system called Hedge Witch. It is called Hedge Witch because it has a symbol of a hedge dividing the physical town from the wilderness. Crossing the hedge was considered dangerous because the forest was regarded as a focus of uncanny happenings, including witchcraft. To the hedge witch and witches alike, the hedge was not thought to be a physical boundary, but a mental boundary. to be crossed in trance work. It is the line drawn between this world and the next, between reality and dream. In this perception, the hedge witch walks the border with a foot in both worlds. So they were often said to be walking the hedge, crossing the hedge, or riding the hedge. Some of you may be thinking, oh, cool, that sounds so mystical. Yes, mystical, a sign, but not spiritual, not big R reality. Walking the hedge with one foot in the material and one foot in the spiritual is very hard to do, hard to keep our balance. It creates that cycle effect we see all the time. First excitement, everything wonderful, then bounce back to everything is terrible. Is this what we want? There is no bounce back and forth or cycles in truth. It is just unfolding infinite perfection. When we insist on keeping material stories going, that is running the circle over and over again and then wondering why we are so tired. Being in two points of view at the same time or hedge riding is difficult, but at least we see the hedge. Now let's walk through the opening, not to another story of any kind, no matter how enticing it may be, but into the spiritual point of view where divine love reigns and is supreme. It is not some place to go, it is present now. The signs are there. Let's follow them sooner rather than later. That's it for this shift shuttle. It was a pleasure riding with you as we shift out of what isn't to what is. I love that you ride this shift shuttle bus with me, and I would love to know how you are getting on with the shifts in your life. There's always the comment section on the podcast page, or email me, or find me on social media under my name, Becca Lewis, spelled B-E-C-A, just in case you can't find me. All the books and ideas are in the show notes for this page, including the special paper called How to Know Whose Voice You're Hearing, that you can download for free. You will also find the place where you can sign up for the Daily Nudge and the other books mentioned. Find all this at theshift.com/podcast, page down, or look for the Shift Shuttle series. If you enjoyed this, would you share it, even rate it, or review it on iTunes? I thank you in advance. Here's your shift hack for today. Pay attention to what you think is happening, because what you think is blocking what is really happening. Till next time, let's keep shifting the story together.